There we go.
Okay, we are in Malachim Aleph, Perek Dalet. Short perek over here. And we begin, even though it seems as though the perek begins, it should almost begin in the second pasuk. But as you can see, the end of the paragraph, which is pasuk Aleph, begins, Vayi HaMelech Shlomo Melech Al Kol Yisrael. That Shlomo became the king over all of the Jewish people, and the significance of that, so if it's a new parak, strange to start a new chapter at the end of a paragraph. That doesn't seem, for all any English majors, would not like to see such a thing. It doesn't make any sense. You start with a new paragraph or a new page, but certainly not at the end of a paragraph. Very not typical of the way things should be operated. So Rashi gives us a little bit of insight as to why we begin in this way. So Rashi tells us that Melech al kol Yisrael, Mishiro b'chachmaso, Sochu kulam b'malchuso. You have to remember that Shlomo was not a very well-experienced aged man. He was only 12, perhaps 20 years old, but certainly not very old and certainly not very experienced in the position of being a leader. And people perhaps were weary to see, is this person really knowledgeable? Is this someone who really has the capacity to lead an entire nation? And only at this point, when they saw his chachma, were people happy that they in fact saw that he was their new leader. What was the chachma? So in the previous chapter, there were two points. First of all, Hashem, for various reasons, granted him one request. And as we mentioned last time, if someone would offer you anything in the world, what would you say? What would it be? For Shlomo, we know it was wisdom. He asked for a heart of wisdom. And because of that, Hashem was so impressed by this young man's choice that he said, not only are you going to get wisdom, but you're going to also get all the other things that can come along with it. You'll get wealth and things of that nature. And then, of course, afterwards was the famous story, which we concluded with last time, about these two women that came about with this major dilemma as to what to do with this child. Who was the true mother? And this was, of course, before DNA and any other ways to be able to determine the true identity of this child. Who was the mother? And we discussed whether or not this actually were two physical people. It could have even been, according to some interpretations, angels, because it's quite interesting that this happens immediately after he's been given this brilliance, this great level of wisdom, such great wisdom, as we said, that he was even able to interpret and understand what birds say, the chirping of a bird or the barking of a dog. Immediately afterwards, he has this encounter. And, of course, as we know, what he said, which seemed a little bit risky, to say to that perhaps he should cut this child in half. And the mother, as we know, who was truly the rightful mother, had such compassion and said, no, don't harm this child. And therefore, that mother received their child, rightfully so. And even though perhaps that could have been a ruse, that could have been a trick. So we saw last time also that there was a bas kol. Rashi says, actually also on this page, 36, the very Pasuk of Zion, that there was a heavenly voice that came forth that verified that the verdict that was poskened by the king was in fact accurate. And therefore, because of that, we now begin the Pasuk and the Perek, which says that Shlomo became the king over all of Israel. It was unquestionable that this was the proper person to lead, because this was a person who was able to take the most difficult and challenging thing and to be able to use his wisdom to be able to come to the MS, to the absolute truth. And for that reason, everyone rejoiced in his malchus. Now, again, you can say, okay, well, that's a connection. Maybe that's where the parak should have ended. Obviously, there must be a connection with this sentence and the next sentences we're going to see. The next part of this chapter, well, it's a very short parak, discusses all the positions of power that were given over, or that he delegated various levels of authority to different people. And the question is, well, how does that help? So perhaps the connection between what we said is why he was able to also remain such loyal, has such loyalty that everyone wanted him to be the king. And the way that he chose all the leaders, he could have been the leader for himself. He said, I'm the leader, and I don't need anyone. I'll make all the decisions. I'll do everything, and that's it. Well, then what happens, sometimes you may not make the right decisions. People will be upset. People think that you're biting off too much, whatever this expression goes. So he delegated and gave certain positions and control to other people. And therefore, people realize that it's not a person who is only interested in power and control and his own honor, but to be able to spread this power to the masses. Furthermore, we're going to end up seeing that he divides into 12 certain responsibilities. And the 12, on one hand, can respond, as we'll see in the sentences, to the months of the year. Now, each one had a job 1 month a year to do, as we'll discuss what that is. But 12 also, we know, represents the tribes, right? The Shvatim. And therefore, instead of saying, you know what, I'm going to give all of the jobs, all the positions to my children, to my family, or to my Shevet, he spread it out evenly. He gave it out to every single one. And by having that type of correct political approach, what ended up happening is that everyone respected him because no one felt that they were left out. So Shlomo truly was a man who was able to create equality and to not feel that because you have to be part of my party and not that party, he was able to unite everyone together. And that was perhaps, even though I didn't see this, I'm imagining that's the connection to the previous sentence and why the Pasuk begins and connects his wisdom in general and being able to make decisions in court, and also being able to make decisions on a political level, knowing exactly who to choose to be your leaders in order to be able to not cause any jealousy, on the contrary, for there to be unity, as you said. So let's go through some of these positions, and a lot of them are, again, are just names, but at least at the beginning we see some of the positions that were held. Ve'elo hasarim, so now we're up to Pasuk Beis. Ve'elo hasarim asher lo. And these were the leaders, or as translated in English, these are his ministers. So the first one that's mentioned is Azariyahu ben Sadok HaKohen. Now, we're going to mention some of them, we're going to see the person's name is mentioned. Some of them, only their father's name is mentioned. And so we'll have to notice that. What's also something worthwhile noticing is the position that they held. So, as we're going to see, excluding this sentence that we just read, all of the names are connected to a job, right? It's not just that this person was some type of leader, did some type of job. Isn't it worthwhile to know what the job was?
Maybe he was the Kohen HaGadol?
That's a possibility. Because when you see the word HaKohen, you imagine the Kohen must be the Kohen. The problem with that, as we're going to see, is that the position of Kohen was really given over to Tzadok, as we're going to see that in Pasuk Dalet shortly. But the question, therefore, is why isn't it a little bit more clear exactly what it is? But it could be some type of a Kohen Gadol, such as the Mitzvot David. The Mitzvot David points out in Pasuk Beis, what is a Kohen? So no one knows exactly what he did. So that's why Mitzvot David begins with the word Ulai. Maybe, perhaps, Hamid Alim Shoach Melchama. Tachat Sadok Sh'omad L'Kohen Gadol. So Sadok was the Kohen Gadol, he was the high priest. Not everyone is aware of this, but there's more than one Kohen Gadol. There is what's called a Sagan Kohen, which was the deputy who was almost like the vice, or the one who's underneath him, in the event that, let's say, the Kohen Gadol is impure. So if the Kohen Gadol cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash, which, as we're going to see next parak, is what's going to be built, a lot of this Amalach HaMalach is going to be discussing the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, which will be interesting, we're going to be learning it. really the same time as we're going to be learning it in Chumash with Parshas Truma, Tetzava, and we'll see that that's going to be the Haftorah for next week's next parak. Nonetheless, there's also a Kohen Gadol who is called the Meshuach Melchama, the Anointed One for War. That they would have a Kohen Gadol, and when you think of a battlefield, you think of brute strength with swords and spears. The truth is, in every religion, you would have various spiritual leaders. They'd go on the very front lines, and they would say certain prayers so that hopefully the people would be victorious in war, and also to give people who are afraid some levels of inspiration.
And Moshe raised his hand.
Right, in the time of Amalek, right. So this, similarly, when the Jewish people would go out to war, there was a special Kohen Gadol that was there for purposes of war. And that's how the Mesudas David interprets this. That he would accompany the army in a time of war. Now, the Radak tells us, again, the point, which is strange in the sentence, is that it doesn't really say the name. So, the reason why the Mesudas David perhaps makes a lot of sense is because it does say HaKohen, and therefore you should immediately think Kohen Gadol. The problem is that there was already a Kohen Gadol Tzadok, so it must be another type of Kohen Gadol, and therefore the one that we're not familiar with, anyone holding this position of being the one anointed for the army for war, would be perhaps this position of Azariahu. If you look at the Radak kind of echoes this. He says, Lo Kosov Al Mimanuhu. It doesn't write to what he was appointed. It doesn't say what his job was. Din Tzadok Zet Tzadok HaKohen Ben Achitov Shayim David Shemashchu Osol HaKohen Im Shlomo. And he says that when it comes to Tzadok, which is, we know Tzadok is Tzadok HaKohen, he was someone that was anointed as the Kohen Gadol together with Shlomo. And therefore the Radak then says, continues and quotes some more names from Divrei HaYamim. So again, the Radak himself was puzzled as to what his position was. And lastly, what Rashi says is, Rashi doesn't say anything, but if you look in the English on page 37, it says, which is underlined over here on the right side, the verse does not say what position Azariah held. The Abarbanel suggests that he was a scribe and is meant to be grouped with the two men mentioned in verse 3. So we're going to mention now in the next pasuk about someone who, these other people who were related to one another, brothers, and that they were scribes. So perhaps that's what he did as well. If it doesn't mention the job, so perhaps it just mentions his name. And HaKohen may not necessarily mean his position. It may mean like a person who's a Kohen gets called to the Torah, da-da-da-da-da, HaKohen. It doesn't mean that's his job. That's his part of his name. Right? That's part of his title. And therefore, that's why the Abarbanel says that perhaps you would need to know his job. You have to read the next sentence in which it mentions two other people's names and their job. Perhaps it's really three people that were scribes, and therefore that's what Azariahu did. We'll notice that Azariahu, which is actually a break of Azar and God, with Hashem
help.
Will help. Right? There will be assistance through Hashem. So it's certainly for Shlomo, who is a man of God, a spiritual individual, to choose someone by that name makes sense. In fact, we're going to see another person with that very same name shortly. Lastly, it's brought down to Me'am Loes that Azariahu perhaps was actually the officer or a leader of Torah education. I'm not sure how the Me'am Loes knows that, but that's what he says. So let's move on to Pasuk Gimel. Let's see another minister or leader in which was appointed by the king. Elichoreph Vachia, these two men were Bnei Shisha, were the sons of Shisha, which clearly sounds like they were brothers, Sofra. So they were scribes. Yoshaphat ben Achilud Hamaskir. And Yoshaphat, what was he? He was a maskir. It's translated in English as a masker is a secretary. If you look in Rashi, Sofrim, he writes, is lichto divar hayamim, to write the chronicles, or to write all the matters which pertain to the king, to the throne, and all the things that occur. If you look in the English, on the next page, page 37, the Abarmanel suggests that each scribe was in charge of recording a different matter, such as taxes and fiscal records, laws and legal decisions, or official events. So if you want to say, like the Abarmanel suggested before, that there was three scribes, why do you need three scribes? One should be enough. So each one had different things in which they had to write. So that's one interpretation. And Yehoshaphat, as you said, was a maskir, which is a secretary, or as the English says it, as an appointments secretary, more specifically, in that he was in charge of the royal calendar. Alternatively, as the Marikara says, he kept the army census, listing who was eligible to serve. So the idea of being a secretary is to know the proper people who should go first, who should go last. And it may not necessarily be like you're at a deli counter and you pick a number and the first come, first serve. It could be a more pressing issue, even if you come later, needs to be addressed earlier. So the king can't decipher all these things. He has too many other things in his head. So Yehoshaphat's responsibility was to see to it that he knew all the different problems, all the things that needed to be presented to the king, and in the proper order as to how they should have been done. Again, according to the other interpretations on the bottom of 37 in English, is that he was in charge of the army census. He wanted to know how many people were in the army, and basically we're dealing with a draft over here. It wasn't voluntary. Anyone who was ready to join the army, he made sure that they did. Pasuk Dal. But then Yahu ben Yehoyada al Hatzava. Ben Yehoyada had a very big job. He was in charge of the army. But Tzadok v'Avyasar Kohanim. As far as Tzadok and Avyasar, as I mentioned before, they were Kohanim. Okay, so if in fact, according to the Masudas David, you had the first person, Zeryahu, was the Kohen who was in charge of the army, so how could you have another Kohen Gadol named Tzadok and another Kohen Gadol named Avyasar? So as soon as David tells us, as we mentioned before, that there are two different levels. First of all, says the Masudas David, Tzadok Kohen Gadol, the Avyasar Sagan. Sagan means the deputy or the second in command. And again, really the only purpose of the second in command, I guess similar to the, on some level, the vice president, if Chas V'Shalom, something happens to the president of the United States, the vice president needs to immediately take over that position. Similarly, if something happens, I don't have to say Chas V'Shalom to the Kohen Gadol, because it doesn't mean he's necessarily died, it could be he just becomes Tameh. If he's impure, then he can't serve. So he comes in contact with a corpse, with a dead body, he can no longer serve as the Kohen Gadol in Yom Kippur. So in that case, so the Sagan Kohen, the deputy, takes over that role, that position. So that's how the Masudas David interprets this. Now, if we look at the Radak tells us that it's hard to believe that Avyasar would be the Sagan Kohen. Because if we remember in the previous Prakam, Avyasar was not someone who necessarily sided so well with Shlomo. In fact, what Shlomo did was, as Avyasar was the Kohen, he was removed of that position of power, and Tzadok took it over. Because Avyasar was a person that was trying to perhaps overthrow Shlomo as the new king. And therefore he removed him from his position of power. So if you look at the Radak of Pasuk Daled, he says, Hayusar Kahuna, they were both leaders and ministers as Kohanim. He says, V'imze Avyasar, who Avyasar ben Achimat, if this is the Avyasar that we're familiar with in Sefer Shmuel, Tamo, it's something which is a wonder, it's a bewilderment. Ki hine Shlomo garshuhum yos Kohen Gadol. Because Shlomo removed him from the position of being Kohen Gadol. So if he was removed from the position of Kohen Gadol, that doesn't make any sense. Skipping a line, Ella min adayim ki kohen achar hayishma Avyasar. It doesn't mention his name is Avyasar, the son of whoever. There's more than one Avyasar out there. To say the name John, there's more than one John, so there's more than one Avyasar. So just because it mentions Avyasar is not necessarily the same one that was removed of the position of power. It says the Radak because it's hard to believe that if he was removed of that position, so what is he doing around? But a very nice answer, if you look at the English on page 39, is the words of the Ralbag. He says that really it's the same of Yasar. He was demoted to deputy Kohen Gadol and took over on occasions when Tzaddik was richly impure, otherwise unable to serve. He was still demoted. There's a huge difference between being the president, being the vice president. There's a huge difference between being the Kohen Gadol and the Sagan Kohen. The Sagan Kohen may not really do a whole lot. If the Kohen remains tahar, remains pure, then the Sagan Kohen is just there as like the fifth wheel in the trunk of your car, which you may never use. So that being the case, it's possible that it really is the same person. So again, it's up to interpretation, and perhaps what the Radak was bothered with is if you're going to demote Evyasar, is removing him from a position of power, making him the Sagan Kohen Gadol, that's still a pretty powerful position. The Radak feels that as he was removed, perhaps he should have been removed completely. It wouldn't have made sense that he just demoted him from the top to the second in control. Perhaps he was completely removed. According to the Ralbag, says, no, it's possible that he was removed and demoted a little bit, and that was enough. So again, it's up to interpretation. obviously, even though I don't know this, it says the word Evyasar. It doesn't say Evyasar, son of whoever. Obviously, any time that we'll find any mention of Evyasar again, assuming we will, obviously it's not going to mention anything except for the name of Evyasar. Otherwise, there would be no dispute over here either. So it's really questionable, again, who this person was.
Pasuk, they would have given his lineage if he was somebody new. Is that what you're saying?
I would... That's probably why the Ralbag likes to say that it must be really the same person. Because we were not introduced to anyone else by the name of Evyasar. And when we hear Tzaddik, we know who that is. Right, so Evyasar perhaps should be the same thing. We should know who it is. It's the person that was introduced in the past. But I'm also saying that we certainly aren't... It cannot be that Evyasar's name, when mentioned later on, will not mention the son of whatever, because then there would no longer be a dispute as to who this person is. Clearly, this remains ambiguous and unclear throughout the text. Moving on to Pasuk Hay. Now, before actually just very one important point that the Miam Lois points out over here, that we notice that when it comes to Ben Yoho Ben Yoyada, his name is mentioned, but his position is only mentioned fourth. You would imagine that there's some level of importance over here. The first thing that is mentioned, let's say, according to the opinion of the Abar Manel, is scribes. So, if the first three people that you write about are scribes, it sounds like you're projecting that you're going to be living in a peaceful time. And by the way, I have also an army, okay? As opposed to in the days of David, the Me'am Lois points out that when he accounts for the positions of power and the leaders, he mentions the person who was in charge of the army first. But when it came to Shlomo, it's not first, second, third. It takes a fourth. Okay, which again alludes to the what Shlomo is anticipating is that God willing should be years, many years of peace to come. The Zeryahu, so again now you have the name of Zeryahu again, Ben Nasan Al Hanitzavim. So Zeryahu is in charge of the Nitzavim, which is translated in English as the commissioners, which that, as we're going to see, is mentioned in the Radak, Mimoina al Shneim Aser Netzivim Shizoich. He's going to be in charge of 12 leaders. There's going to be 12 leaders, as the rest of the parak is going to mention their names and the places in which they ruled. And Azariahu was in charge of those 12. So it wasn't, you just had 12 leaders, and you had someone that oversaw those 12 leaders.
The hierarchy.
top-heavy bureaucracy over here. But this is what he did. The Zavod ben Nosson Kohen Rea HaMelech. It's a very interesting position of Zavod ben Nosson. He was a Rea HaMelech. He was the king's friend. What exactly does that mean? What does that job entail?
His chief of staff.
It could be something. I don't know. What exactly did he do? Alder Radak points out over here and says, Rea HaMelech, it says Sheshbina Demalicha, that he was like nearby the king. Shai Imo Tamid, he was with him continuously. So he befriended him, he was like his right-hand man. It doesn't really discuss what he did, but perhaps it was someone that gave him guidance, gave him advice, probably something like that.
That's Axelrod. Really?
It's presumably, because we don't find, all the other positions are very specific, collecting taxes or whatever, scribe. Here, perhaps that's what it in fact is referring to. So that maybe that's what it means, that he's always by the king's side, giving him guidance as to what he should do. Okay, fine. V'achishar habayis. Achishar was in charge of the house. What does that mean? That he was in charge of the house. So the Mesunas David says, Kol tzarchi habayis hayu nasim al piv. All the needs of the house were in by his mouth, which made almost like he's like almost like a superintendent.
It's like his staff was for the
habayis. He was in charge of everything as far as the palace is concerned, making sure there's food and making sure there's enough help and the hours. So that was what Achishar did. And we'll see, that was actually quite a grueling position. Va'adoniram ben Avda al Hamas. And of course, you have to have someone who's in charge of taxes.
The IRS.
Pretty much. So that's what his position was. Okay. And on some level, that's also what these commissioners did as well, as far as collecting various taxes. L'shlomo shneim aser nitzavim al kol Yisrael. That Shlomo chose and had 12 of these commissioners or leaders over all the Jewish people throughout all the land, no matter where you were, right? V'chilkulu es hamelech ves beso. And their purpose of collecting was in order to make sure that the king, as well as his palace, his household, were sustained, that they had enough food. Chodesh b'shana, ye'al ha'echad l'chalkel. It was the responsibility of 1 month in the entire year that they would have to provide sustenance for the king and his household. If we look in Rashi, Rashi says in Pasuk Zayin, v'chilkulu es hamelech, Kol sudaso umachel hasusim v'chol sarche hotza. So it was a tremendous amount of food that needed to be brought into the palace, as well as feeding his susim, his horses, which we'll see at the beginning of the next parak. V'chol sarche hotza, right? All of his expenditures, exactly. So instead of taxing everyone and on a daily basis, so it was 1 month. Everyone knew that 1 month of the year you had to give a lot of food to the king, depending on where you were located. So the commissioner was in charge of a certain area. We'll discuss who the person was and the place that they were in charge of. Obviously, it was divided somewhat equally, depending on their financial abilities to sustain the king and the palace. And every month, different people would have to give stuff, food to the king. Yeah, we're going to see it's all depending on where you were. So we're going to see who these 12 were right now.
Every month, one of these 12 men had to be responsible for what?
All the food, all the king's, as Rashi said, kol sudaso, all the food. And machel hasusim, to be able to, for the all of his animals, his horses, and we're going to see.
And how did they do that? How did they raise the money? I'm not understanding.
Well, if you're a farmer or whatever it is, this is a form of tax.
It was food, not money.
Well, you know, no,
they worked. They worked the land.
Yes,
they were workers.
The expenses, all the
the Jewish people, people had land, they were worked the land or whatever occupations they were involved in, and they were taxed, and all those taxed, not necessarily with money or whatever they may have had, and that was given over to the palace. So the commissioner was in charge to make sure.
Each region of the country.
Right, so there's different locations that each part had an obligation once for a month out of the year that they knew that that month a lot of their stuff was going to go to the king, to the palace.
Okay, but it wasn't each one of these 12
no, there
officers.
The officers were in charge to make sure that it happened. They were in charge of the region.
Each shevet has an area.
Right.
Each month was a different shevet.
Right. We're going to see the way it's divided is not clearly by the tribes. We're going to see the way...
Regions, 12 regions.
The country was divided by tribes.
Right, so it's the way that when we'll see the sentences in a second, it's not necessarily by divided equally among the Shvatim, because we know that that would not necessarily be fair.
It can't be.
Because some tribes were larger.
Some
were
more
an agricultural area.
Right, so it wouldn't have been... That would not have caused peace. Because you had to make sure it was divided equally, which did not necessarily mean each tribe is in charge of 1 month.
The same thing.
Now, the way that the Me'am always explains this is the reason why Shlomo did all this was not because he loved having huge banquets. He actually did it for he had ulterior motives. His intentions, in fact, were to be able to have an open door policy of Hachnasas Orchim, that any person who wanted could always feel comfortable to go to the capital, to go to the palace, to be able to eat. And because that could obviously mean an enormous amount of people, this was something which was required. So this was a way, on some level, of those people who are poor would be sustained, and they'd be able to, it's almost like going to having a soup kitchen 12 months of the year. You know that you can go to the palace, you'd be able to have a nice meal. So the king is taking care of you by taxing the wealthy or those who are able to afford. They bring it to a central location, and in that central location, those people are able to eat.
It's also each one was responsible for his people, knew what his people needed and what they can give. And this was uniting, it became one nation.
Right, right. And that's perhaps, that's one of the ideas of connecting
everybody
to one purpose.
Everybody had an open policy every leader, right. And an open policy to the palace and influence,
right,
on the king.
Right, exactly. And so that would be a way to be able to create this, if I can use a bipartisanship, this relationship of both of everyone together.
Rotating. Each one is a
month. Right, of course, on a more, for those who enjoy all different types of delicacies, it's also makes a lot of sense to do it this way, because as opposed to eating a piece of kugel and a piece of chicken every single Friday night, you know that every single month the menu is going to probably vary a little bit, because if it's coming from different regions, they probably have, there's different seasons and there's different foods that they specialize in. So it really enhances the affluence of, and the excitement of going to such a place in which continuously there's a changed menu. Okay, well, that's...
Let me just ask one question.
Yeah.
In Pasuk Beis, when they mention the 12 people, they call them Sarim, and here they're called Shemasar Nitzavim. Are these the same people or different people?
Well, the Sarim, I think, is referring to
the scribes.
Right.
So these 12 that we're talking about here, who are responsible for the food and everything else for the palace, these are different people. Is that what you're saying? And,
yeah.
This is where I got confused.
I think, I think Pasuk Hey makes it a little more clear. For example, Azariahu, he would be considered to be among the Sarim, among the ministers, and he was responsible to oversee the Nitzavim, those 12 commissioners.
Okay, so this is where I got confused. These are separate people, 12 that are dividing the country up. The division of the country is being headed by these Nitzavim.
Right, exactly.
Different people.
Right. Okay, so now we can breeze through these people's names. And we'll just maybe make a couple of quick brief points as we go through them. All right. We're up to Pasuk Ches.
So these are the 12 people that are running the country as far as the regional commissioner.
Well said. So here we're obviously going to go get 12 names here. Ve'elu Shemosam, and these are their names. Ben Chur, Bahar Ephraim. So first of all, you notice it doesn't even mention the person's name. He's called Ben Chur. And perhaps it's because
Ben-Hur.
That's kind of right. Good old movie, right? That he was given this position because of his father. He almost like inherited through nepotism. And he was in charge of Har Ephraim. Now, some of these areas we may be familiarized with. The Mepharshim don't really help us out exactly where they are, but obviously it's all spread out in different regions.
Could that have been the same Chur who was next to Moshe?
Chur?
It's a long life.
I don't think he's
it's a very long life.
It could be the same.
Maybe because he's related to him.
Do we know why they don't give their names, just their false?
That we're going to see, for example, when we get to Pasuk Beis, his name is mentioned. Some of them, their father's name is mentioned. Sometimes their name is also mentioned, which usually means because the person themselves may not have merited on their own right, but it's only because of their relationship to
their
father.
Maybe it was a family thing. Maybe the whole family was involved.
Right. We're going to see that that Shlomo appoints some of his family as well. So let's see. Pasuk Tes Ben Deker. B'makatz Shalavim Veis Shamash. So he's in charge of these areas. Veis Shamash, I guess we're familiar with. The Elon Veis Chanan, as well as such a place. Ben Chesed, like someone who collects taxes, and he's called the son of charity, of kindness. Barubos Lo Shoich of Chol Eretz Chefer. So he was in charge of this entire region. Ben, again, none of them do we find their names except their father's names. Ben Avinadav, Kol Nefas Dar, Kavos Mashlomo Haisel Isha. Now the one interesting thing that's mentioned over here doesn't mention the boy's name, but the thing which is special about him is that he was actually related through marriage to the king. It says Tofas Bas Shlomo, one of Shlomo's daughter's names, was Tofas, and this man, who we just know him as Ben Avinadav, he married Shlomo's daughter.
So when did this happen?
Later on.
Doesn't really talk
about. Why are they talking about her now? Maybe he's much older now. Maybe.
Okay, good point. It must be.
Something's
going to
happen in the future.
Right. Otherwise, it's kind of hard to understand. What does that mean?
This is very confusing.
Right. You're right. That's hard to understand if that's.
Maybe she was betrothed when she was born.
But did he get married yet and have children?
Well, he was married. He was married to the Egyptian princess that we saw in the previous chapter.
And he had a child already?
That we don't find anything. No. We all were absent because it doesn't say it anywhere. So it probably means it's going to happen later on. Abana ben Achilu Tanach Umegidai, V'chol Beishan Asher Eitzel Sarasana Mitachas LeYisrael MiBeishan Ad Ovel M'choyla Ad Ever L'Yakma. So all those are different places, but again, what's interesting over here, it does mention in this situation not only the father's name, but also Ba'anna ben Achilud. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Ben Gever Beromas Gilad. So the next person does not mention his name, only his father's. He was in charge of Beromas Gilad. Lo Chavos Yar Ben Menashe Asher Begilad, Lo Chavel Argav Asher Bebashan, Shishim Arim Gedolos. There were 60 large cities over there. Chaimo with a wall of Ariach Nechayshes, as well as copper bars to ensure that no one would be able to penetrate through. Achinadav ben Ido Machanayama. So he was, here we mention his name, Achinadav, he was in charge of Machanayama. Achimatz ben Aftali, Gam Hulokach as Basmas Mashlomo Isha. Here he is with another daughter. That Shlomo had a daughter, he took Basmas as a wife. Okay.
Later on to marry his daughter.
So that's presumably so. Now, one of the interesting things we're going to see is we do see that there was only two son-in-laws that had these positions of power. nowhere else do we see any other son-in-laws that had positions of power. More importantly, nowhere does it say Ben Shlomo. We don't find anywhere that he chose one of his sons to take a position of power. And perhaps the reason for that makes sense because of all the problems that he had with his brother. That he was concerned of the position of overthrowing, being overthrown. Furthermore, he can remember what happened to his father. And with David, when it came to his children, and David's children tried to overthrow and take over. So perhaps Shlomo, realizing this, deliberately made sure not only not to have nepotism, but more importantly, to secure his throne by making sure that his relatives were not in such strong positions of power. Anyway, it's a good question why these two son-in-laws. Obviously, it's worth doing more research, understanding the significance of these people.
It would be interesting to see a map of.
I know. I was hoping Mamloy sometimes has maps. There's no map with us, unfortunately. It would have been nice. Bana ben Chusha, the Asher of Alois, Yoshua ben Paruach, be Sachar, Pasik Yud Ches, Shimi ben Ela, be Binyamin. So some of them are in charge of the entire Shevet. Some of them is not necessarily the tribe, it's the area, certain areas. Pasuk Yutas. Gever ben Uri be'eretz Gilad, which is on the Transjordan, east of the Jordan. Eretz Sichon Melech Amori be'og Melech Bashan, which is the two areas in which were conquered in the days of Moshe, before the Jews actually crossed over the Yarden. And there was one other in the Tzib, one other commissioner who was on the land. Well, it doesn't say anything about what that guy did, which is actually, if you were counting, which I wasn't, that should be number 13. If you look at Rashi over here, in the Tzim Echon Asher Ba'aretz, you have a dispute between the opinions of Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel plead, Yichad Omer, Echad Omoyne Al Kulam. One says that he was in charge of all of them, which, who, Ezariah ben Nasan Hamul Amala. This person, it doesn't mention his name, it just says, Unetziv Echad, there was one commissioner on the land. So maybe that's referring to, as we alluded to previously in Pasuk Hey, is Azariyahu ben Nasan, who was in charge of those 12. But then Rashi says another interesting point that we have to think about, because we're familiar with a 12-month calendar, but do we always have 12 months? Right. B'chad Oymar keneged chodesh ha'ivu. That sometimes is another number one, and we love others so much that we may have a second other.
You had
to work once, yeah, every few years. And if you lived in whatever, it doesn't say what he did, which land. Maybe that year everyone had to do, it was not very clear. Concludes the parak with the following pasuk. Yehuda v'Yisrael, both of them, everyone together, because everyone was involved, Rabin, they were very mighty. Kechol asher al hayam larov, they're as much as the sand by the Al-Svasayam, says this was over by the seashore. There were so many of them. And as we often translate, it may not necessarily be quantity. It could be in quality. Concludes the parak. They ate, they drank, and they rejoiced. And we conclude with the words of the Radak over here. That's exactly what it says. So the Radak tells us over here, the very bottom of page 38. What?
I don't understand why it says Yehuda Israel. It's supposed to be united. Why is it Yehuda?
Because we saw that before when it came to David.
Why?
He was not in charge of everyone. He
but
was only in charge of Yehuda and Israel.
It says that he united the people. All Israel were one.
They were all one. That's why it mentions it specifically. Because they were all one. You shouldn't think that he was only in charge of one and not the other. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Let me just finish this Radak so we can finish. I know I'm a couple minutes over. I apologize. So says the Radak on the bottom of page 38. Kamal Svasa Yam. We were as mighty as the sand on the seashore. Vasayvar Hazeh writes the Loimer. What does it come to teach us? Ki hayim evarchim b'yemei Shlomo. That the people were blessed. B'yemei bitnam v'hirabim. That there was something unique that happened in their birth that caused them to multiply V'chein b'pri behemtam, v'pri amasam, when it came to their animals, their livestock, there were many, as well as the fruits of the land. They had a lot of produce. V'yoichlim u'shoysim esmeichim, and here's the key words over here. They ate, they drank, and they were merry. Ki lo hayo lehem pachin me'oyev. They had no concern or fears from any of their enemies.